a very warm welcome here in the wonderful medieval vaulted space of the Shakespeare and Sons bookshop. We're joined here by a live audience, and I'd also like to say hello to our audience around the world, people listening to us on Radio Prague. To our radio listeners, I'd also like to say a very happy Christmas. Even though we are actually recording this programme, or we're talking here today a couple of weeks before Christmas, this is going to be going out as part of Radio Prague's special broadcasts over Christmas. This is the second in our series of discussions at Shakespeare and Sons. It's taking place just over 2 weeks before Christmas, and this is in fact the last day of the Jewish holiday, the Festival of Lights, Chanukah. Last night, the final Chanukah candle on the menorah would have been lit. And that's also something I'd like to return to later in the programme. But first, I'd like to introduce our guests and the subject that we're going to be talking about today. The subject is, very broadly, does religious faith still have a relevance in a secular Czech Republic? And also, does and should the country's Christian and Jewish legacy continue to define in some way our ethical decisions and public life in the Czech Republic? I'm joined here by three extremely interesting guests who should have a great deal to say about this subject. First of all, the highly acclaimed Czech poet, Silva Fischerová, whose poetry is very rich in irony, chaos, and God.
Good evening.
And also whiskey features in your poetry.
And beer.
And all these different ingredients are pretty much in equal measure. How do I describe the next guest? Well, Tomáš Sedláček is an economist. In fact, he's one of the most prominent economists in the Czech Republic. He's the chief strategist of a major Czech bank. But he's also the author of a fascinating book that was published just over a year ago called The Economics of Good and Evil. And this book, among other things, I think argues passionately that economics is a great deal more than just a science, and it's very closely tied with our sense of morality. Tomáš's book is also just about to be published in English translation by Oxford University Press, I believe, in March.
That's great.
So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And our third guest, we mentioned Oxford. Our third guest also has an Oxford connection. The translator and interpreter Jana Frankova studied at Oxford in the late 1960s, and following the Soviet invasion of 1968, that fact, paradoxically, instead of helping Jana in her career, was a hindrance, I think I can put it that way, the fact of having studied in Britain. And Jana has taken over the years a growing interest in her Jewish roots. And I think I'd be right in saying more at a sort of a level of identity and culture rather than at a religious level.
Yes, I think so.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Before we continue, I'd like to thank as well the Czech Literary Portal for being the co-organisers of this event. And I would very much like to thank again the staff of the Shakespeare and Sons bookshop where we're sitting now. I'll start a discussion with a cliché that we hear again and again in the Czech Republic, and I want to get it over and done with. We're always hearing that the Czech Republic is the most atheist country in Europe. It's one of those phrases which, when you actually stop and think about it, does it really mean anything? And how do you measure how atheist a country is? As we have an economist here, can you measure how atheist a country is, Tomáš Sedláček?
Well, you know, the standard way of doing this is, of course, asking people where would they put themselves, which usually doesn't say much. I think we Czechs are very weak believers in our own atheism. Because of the history, I think what people resent here is some sort of a pressure that they feel associated with the church because of the wars that we've had during the Protestant era. But if you ask people whether they're atheists, they tend to address themselves as an atheist. But if you ask them, well, do you believe there's a higher power, then many of the so-called atheists would, you know, acknowledge one, but they're not churchgoers per se. And I personally think that we actually are very keen and strong believers, only we don't like to admit it. It's something considered so private and so personal, we kind of keep it to ourselves.
And Silva Fischerava, the god who appears in your poetry does seem to be very personal. It is also hard to define.
God is always personal, I think, for anyone. It cannot be different. People sometimes don't want to admit their feelings. I do.
Jana Frankova, do you agree with the statement that the Czech Republic is the most atheist country in Europe, or that do you believe it has any sense to say so?
I'd agree with Tomáš, because I don't really know myself what atheist is.
Yeah.
And I think that Czechs as such are anti-church, they're anti-authority. And church is something that stands for authority. But I myself would say, I can't say I believe in God, but I do believe that we do have something in common. I don't know what it is, but I don't think that this is atheist's position. So I think many Czechs are like me.
I think Václav Havel has described it as the mystery of being, I think was the statement.
Mystery of being, something high up above us.
If I may add something, it's an important word, because Tomáš Halík, a Catholic priest, quite often says that there is a big number of people who just believe in something, and there are so-called somethingists.
Yeah.
And it's a big number in this country of those somethingists.
I have the impression in the Czech Republic that the situation is very different from some other countries, such as Poland or Ireland or the United States, where religious belief seems to be quite strongly tied with patriotism or with national identity, and that almost by implication being Polish means to believe. Or if an American president were to say, I don't believe in God, it would be probably electorally suicidal. Whereas here, it seems that in the Czech Republic we're fairly liberated from that kind of pressure, that the idea of believing in God or faith or being a member of the church being an inherent part of national identity doesn't seem to figure, and in a sense it could be quite liberating.
I think the Czechs actually can't associate themselves with a given religion because of their history. Czechs have greater tendency to associate themselves with historical figures. They'll speak about Jan Hus or
yeah.
Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, nowadays Havel. They always are actually moral personalities. But I think due to the historical development, due to the pre-war development, between the wars development, due to the 40 or how many years of communism, they just didn't have a chance to associate themselves with a church.
I'd like to ask you about the legacy of the communist regime as well, of an overtly atheist regime. Some people pointed out, for example, that under communism, it was possible, for example, to talk about truth without ever needing to use inverted commas. Because when Havel was talking about living in truth, it was not living the lie that the regime offered as reality. I would be interested to know to what extent that legacy of that, I suppose, more simple sense of what's right and wrong that was present under the old regime, because it was so much clearer, to what extent that still felt today. Jana?
I think in those days, actually, people in their private lives were much more convinced about their own truths than they are nowadays. Perhaps it's much more easier if you are confronted with something that you disagree with. Nowadays, you are supposedly absolutely free to think what's right, what's wrong. And I think this might be the legacy of communism, that people are not used to it, that they are given the choice or range of choices, and it's up to them to choose.
Well, I think you were making one quite widespread mistake. We are considering atheism a religious. Atheism is a belief system like any other. And the way we Czechs, or, you know, this happens quite frequently, they think that atheism is something where you don't need any faith. This is absolutely wrong. An atheist must believe much, many more things than a believer. Atheism is not a neutral ground. You can't step out of your belief systems And I want two last comments. We must realize, as the ones of us that are Europeans, that we had scientific atheism and scientific communism, and we had scientific racism. My beloved anthropology started as a scientific field where we studied the difference between the skulls. This, of course, at the time, was considered proper science.
Aren't you equating the scientific atheism of communist regimes with the atheism of that many people feel in a democratic pluralist environment where it isn't reduced to an ideology or to a religion in the sense that it was under communism?
Well, atheism is an ideology whether it's under communism or under free democracy, and atheism is a belief system like Christianity, like Islam, like communism, like many other things. And there are so many things you just have to believe only in the different. The only difference is that we don't trust the priests, but we trust, you know, the scientists. If you have a white collar, then that's pretty good for being the master of truth nowadays.
I'd like to change the subject completely and ask Jana about how she feels about being Jewish in today's Czech Republic, in the wake of the Holocaust, in the wake of the 40 years of communist rule. How do you experience your Jewishness?
Well, to tell you the truth, the same as I did before 1989. I mean, I knew I was Jewish since the age of 6, I think. Having been born after the war, I was the same as many Jewish kids who were never told they were Jewish because their parents wanted to protect them and because the parents never wanted, you know, they just closed their eyes and they wanted to pretend, you know, they have nothing to do with it. But since I knew since the age of 6 who I was, in a way it was a relief. I remember, it's a funny story, I was 6 walking to school with a girl from the floor above. We went to the same class and she asked me, by the way, isn't your auntie Jewish? That was actually my cousin who was bringing me up because my mother was the breadwinner. And I thought about it and then I said, no, she would have certainly told me. But then, as we walked back from school, I suddenly realized that actually, although she didn't tell me, she was Jewish. So this is how I learned. And I think that after 1989, I felt exactly the same like before because it was already part of me. The only good thing is that you don't have to hide it. It's not that I would have been hiding it, but you don't have to be careful about who thinks something wrong about you. You can go to the Jewish community. You can actually live like a normal person, but I think the same must apply to people who used to go every Sunday to the Mass, and they must have been afraid who sees them, who sees their kids, who's going to take it against them. It's great that you can actually call your daughter Ruth and you don't have to worry like I did 34 years ago when my daughter was born. You know, you don't have to worry about
things
like
this. You're worried in the sense that it was a sign.
No, I was not allowed to call her Ruth. And we had a fight with the magistrate.
Really?
Yes.
But you win.
And I won because I said, okay, she's going to have no name. And they said, no, you must give her a name. I said, I gave her a name, but you don't want to accept it. So in the end, they gave up. They just deleted the age at the end of her name. Oh, yeah. So then we had it put it on. We paid 1,000 crowns for it. And her father, who's a journalist, wrote one of his best pieces, "The Most Expensive Age in My Life," which, when you turn it into Czech, is good.
One of the things that I found very moving was last year at the beginning of Chanukah, when there was the candlestick, the menorah, placed as it is now every year on Jan Palach Square, and the Czech Prime Minister, who at the time himself was Jewish, lit the first candle. I found that very moving.
In a way, it is moving, but I would say it's a sort of, for us Jews, it's a sort of satisfaction that we are part of this nation, because we are Czech Jews. We Jews always must belong somewhere. They want to be Jews, but they belong to the place where they live. And I think it's a normal ambition of any person, any community, to know that you are accepted, that you are part of that bigger community. This is what's with menorah on Jan Palach Square. That's a great thing that everybody sees it, that people walk around and they see that menorah is being lit and they learn about it. And it's true that in the past few years, I hear people who otherwise don't know anything about Hanukkah, they'll ask me, when is your Jewish Christmas? And, and they, through this menorah in the center of Prague, learn about, okay, they have different holidays, they learn what those holidays are, and I think they accept it.
I grew up in a family where, from religious point of view, the most important person was my grandfather, who was Czech Protestant, and I grew up among Bibles. But in fact, I just, as a child, I used to go to church. But my mother lost her faith. And when I asked her then, when did it happen? So her answer was very strange. She said, in 1942, because face to all those horrible cataclysms, I couldn't believe that God exists at all. What's very strange, because in those years, almost everybody tried to believe in something. So, but it happened, and then I had to find my Catholic God. So.
And you opted for Roman Catholicism?
Yeah.
Why?
I think if someone says, from reason to faith, it's a cliché. I think it cannot happen. What can happen is from faith to reason, how to understand it, or how to try to understand it, although the heart of any religion is a mystery, I think. So something happened, and just I've experienced something which I even tried to write about, but I failed. I cannot speak about it, but just it was very personal and very dramatic.
So this is a God beyond words.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Tomasz Sedláček, what was your path to faith?
Well, it was also completely irrational. It had nothing to do with anything.
Did you grow up in a religious household?
No. To the contrary, I grew up in an atheistic household. It was funny, though, because I was brought up in Finland, because my father worked for Czech Airlines, and we would travel there and fro quite constantly. And the irony was that to the Finnish kids, I actually had to explain that I come from a country where they're actually atheists. And what does it mean? Oh, they're actually people who don't believe in God. Now you're kidding. And I said, no, really? I mean, there's one at the embassy. Okay, next time she comes, you show us. And I literally remember her name was Maruška. She was a daughter of somebody who worked at the embassy. And she was a self-proclaimed atheist. And I had these kids come up and queue in the door to see, so how do you think the world was created? You know? And then I went back to Czech Republic and I was telling my friends, you know, I live in a country where everybody believes in God. No, you're kidding. then they said, oh, you believe in God because your grandmother told me. I said, yeah, you were an atheist because your grandmother told you. You know, there is no difference there's no difference in the belief system. We've all both been told either by scientists or by someone, you just have to choose who you believe. So back to the more personal question, yes, so I actually, it was a completely, when I had my conversion, it was 89 or 90, quite close after the revolution. I didn't understand anything what the guy was saying, by the way, because he was speaking this weird language called English. And only later on did I, you know, start reading Aquinas and Augustine and the rest, and now I find God in reasonable things, which is my little deviation.
Do you find God in numbers as well as somebody who works in a bank?
So I'm not sure if there. I haven't looked there, but perhaps. It's funny because in the Old Testament you often, you know, have this swap from singular to plural, and you know, sometimes numbers are made jokes of. For example, when Abraham argues about the number of the righteous people in Sodom.
There's a book of numbers.
Yeah, there's a book of numbers. So he keeps arguing, and he goes like, you know, 50, 40, and he hangs. It's quite a long, of course, you've all probably read it. And then at the end of the day, do we read of counting of the righteous? No, this whole debate vanishes in thin air, and, you know, the angels don't go around saying, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's it, okay, burn it down. So it's as if this whole numbering and counting was made just fun off, because it absolutely didn't matter. He didn't destroy the righteous with the unrighteous. He took the righteous out.
If I may add, it's one of Isaac Newton's sayings. Mathematics is a language in which God wrote the laws of the universe. Isaac Newton, Principia Mathematica, I suppose. So it's great, isn't it?
I'd like to ask about today's Czech society, because there is a very strong sense among many people, and I just read about a survey worldwide that's just been published about people's disappointment with their politicians, with degree of corruption among politicians in many countries. And one thing that I know is that Tomáš has been very interested in is reconnecting the world of business, the world of economics, and the world of morality, the questions of morality. And I'd like to ask you, all of you, to come back to the original question I brought up in my introduction about, is it relevant to bring religion back into the debate, the political and economic debate in the Czech Republic today? I shall start with you, Jana, because you say you're not a believer, or that you're not an active believer, unlike our other two guests. Whether you think this is a good thing, or a danger, or individual?
If you're asking about the morality, about the ethics of the society, yeah, I think there is a danger. I think that this society is, in a way, lost its faith in the morals. Unfortunately, people don't realise when they criticise, quite rightly, the politicians and members of parliament and all these public figures, that they are one of them.
It's not them and it's us.
Yes, it's us and us. Even though I can't say I believe in the God of the Old Testament, even though I'm afraid to say I don't believe in him, I think that something like, I don't know whether religious upbringing, but being brought up in these surroundings that have certain rules, and those rules can be usually only the religious rules, and it doesn't matter which religion, whether my God of the Old Testament or whether the God of the New Testament. But among the, for example, young people, I recognize those, or I met those who were brought up in certain system of values that nowadays actually distinguishes them from their contemporaries. And I think this is what we miss. I don't think that we miss the religion as such.
But you say that it has to be in some way religious values, or some way transcendental.
It must be transcendental. And I don't think, I don't see anything else but religion as this set of values, even though I didn't grow up in a religious family. I actually grew up in something that probably English listeners won't understand. I grew up in a Jewish Bolshevik family. That's the Jews who entered the Communist Party at the end of the war, thinking, now this is what's going to save all of us, you know, from the future atrocities, and they'll never be repeated again. But there was something in the family, in my mother, in that cousin of mine who brought me up and who survived the camp, the concentration camp, that actually was like a religion. They just didn't call it religion. In a way, it was very strict, but it was simple. And I think that it did give me something.
Well, you know, it's difficult. This is an inconsistency. I mean, either there are transcendental laws that are given transcendentally, or there are no laws. And you can't simply take the God person thing out of it. It's like taking papers out of a book. So this, I think, is an inconsistency. It only proves that we are not atheists, but we're agnostics. I think what you're really saying is that you're an agnostic, because you said, I'm afraid of saying that I'm an atheist. So you're not sure. That means one is agnostic. And the second point is this problem of evil. And this is my little side proof how very Christian we are by the existence of evil. It is against our ideals that we perceive evil. I mean, we have an ideal that innocent people shouldn't suffer, which is a Christian ideal. Nobody ever said that. It's not written in the stars. It's not, you know, it's not a law of gravity. It is a Christian ideal that we got from Christianity. And we're very disappointed if reality doesn't meet our own embedded Christian ideals, and we arrive to the conclusion that God doesn't exist. This is another inconsistency.
I would like to introduce here an idea which you perhaps do not know. It's a distinction of Wilfred Cantwell Smith, Canadian philosopher, who distinguished between belief and faith, which is, I think, of extreme importance, because belief, in his words, it can be either scientific belief or religious belief, which means some set of rules, quite clear, quite simple. And there is faith, that is completely different, because it's something, in his view, it's something stronger and not that clear. It means that people believe in some sense of life. And he said that people can have belief, but they don't need necessarily to have faith. And he always stressed that what's more important, of course, is faith. So I think even in Czech Republic and for the citizens of this poor country, so if people will have this faith, this love to life, or how to say this, it's the it what matters.
I'm trying to think if the distinction belief and faith exists in the Czech language. It doesn't actually, does it?
No, I don't think so.
No,
and also,
Thomas
said that we can have belief in something, own in something, just belief in, but what doesn't apply to faith?
I've been monopolising on the questions, and I think it would be nice to open the discussion to our audience, which also includes some distinguished guests here, also some experts. So if anybody has a question, and then maybe we can come back again to the debate, or anything that they'd like to comment on or add in connection with what we've been talking about or what we might continue to talk about.
Well, I'm the Reverend Ricky Yates, the Anglican chaplain here in Prague, and all I wanted to actually say was to endorse what Tomasz was saying. The saying that I have is, it's amazing what you have to believe in order to be an unbeliever.
Yeah.
If you think your way around that. Because atheism is a belief system, and I think that needs to be emphasised.
Yeah.
My other one, which is the slightly more humorous one, with this question of national identity we were talking about earlier, you're quite right, it's often tied up with a nation. And my wife lived in Spain for 4 years, and there they have an expression, in Spain, we are all Roman Catholics, even the atheists. It's a cultural thing, not necessarily a matter of belief.
Yeah. Adding to what you said, during the summer I was in Ostrava for a music festival. And, well, you know, we had a couple of drinks, and Iggy Pop had a concert there, and a friend of mine, he bumped into me, this must have been like 10, 11 in the evening, and he said, "Hey, are you here by accident?" And I said, "Are you an atheist?" And he said, "Yes, are you here by accident?" I said, "If you're an atheist, that's a stupid question to ask, because everything is an accident. So, you know, don't go around asking stupid questions, you know. You're an accident, I'm an accident, we're both two accidents that accidentally, of course, met. There is no meaning in life. Absolutely no meaning. I mean, the philosopher has been trying to work around it. If it's not transcendental, there is no point. You can't even have the whole idea of accident and some telos, meaning or a sense of direction, is a luxury that the atheist simply cannot afford, because it is, again, an inconsistency, a very simple inconsistency, too.
I think one of the important things about, I don't know whether I can say it or not, if I said I'm not a real believer, but I think that part of the set of values of, or the reflection or expression of the of having the set of values, is that if you do something wrong, you feel ashamed. I think that shame is one of the things that somehow evaporated from this society. And I don't know, Tomasz will probably protest, but I think that it is, I think that this is a very important thing. And this is what I spoke about when I said, if you grow up in an environment which supports, and now I don't think it is that important whether it is a religion or another set of beliefs, but if you grow up in the environment where you feel ashamed if you do something really wrong, that this is a sort of precondition for growing up and ending up different than many of our politicians.
Any more questions from our audience? It'd be very nice if you could join into the discussion.
My name's Ben Nielsen. I'm a teacher here from America, so living in Prague for a few years. My question was how you think spirituality affects the younger generation, because it seems like when we talk about Czechs maybe being not religious or atheist, do you think that this is applying to like the middle-aged generation, those people that grew up with their parents still under communism or under communism themselves, or do you think that this is has affected the younger generation differently, those that have grown up under democracy? Is there been any change because of this, or do you think it's a continuation of life over the past 40 or 50 years?
So I wouldn't blame communism for it. I mean, this is a quite a first thing that's at hand to blame for racism. But look at polls.
But you are very young. I mean, you're...
Thank you. About you
are, I believe you're in your early 30s. So you were still pretty much a kid when the regime fell. So you must feel a difference, a generational difference from people who are older than yourself.
Not in the belief system. I'm the last generation that still remembers communism. I was 12 when the walls came down. My brother, who is 4 years younger, remembers nothing of anything. You know. But
after
communism, KC here. But I teach every year, so I see the changes in the younger wings, so to speak. But I see no difference, quite. I mean, they're more open to it. This is, of course, the danger of an inter-religious dialogue of, you know, rubbishing religion into diplomacy, which I often see in an inter-religious dialogue. And this is one of the also huge follies of our age, that this, I think, is the key mistake of psychoanalysis, that peace is possible. Who said that? This is the basic folly of economists, that equilibrium, i.e. peace in prices and demand, whatever, is possible. This is a belief that comes from schools that I don't want to go into, Stoics, basically, now that we've mentioned antique. But maybe we're not made to all look alike and agree and be nice and tolerant. And of course, I don't criticize tolerance, by God, of course. We mustn't force our beliefs on anybody else. But yet, you know, there is a huge difference between respect and tolerance. And I don't think this world needs more tolerance. I think it needs more respect.
Jana, your daughter Ruth, is about Tomasz's age, I think.
She's his age, yeah.
Does she have a very different perspective on Jewishness than you do?
She says, my mom is a Jew who is Czech. I am a Czech who is also Jew.
What?
She, at first, because she sang in a Jewish choir, in the Jewish community in Prague, she was part of it. And then, when she was about 16, 17, she started rebelling like anyone else, you know, I don't want to do this, what I did till the age of 16, etc. And which meant that she sort of stepped back, made a distance between herself and the Jewish community. But now I think she feels part of it, and she would hate not feeling part of it.
You had a question at the back, I think.
I'm Laurel Kratochvila, and I guess what you just said, I listened to, and I found that very interesting. What you're saying about the daughter who says, well, I'm Czech, but I'm Jewish. And I say this because I suppose I just observe from an outsider's point of view. I'm an American Jew who lives here. This is my husband, so... American-Czech marriage. And my experience here is that for the first time in my life, I feel that Judaism is something outside of the norm within the Czech Republic. This is my view of it. That to just casually celebrate a holiday, to have a Passover Seder, to have Hanukkah like we did this week, is viewed more as a very religious act than just something very normal, the way someone would celebrate Christmas, right, with very little meaning, but just, this is a tradition, this is what we do.
That's a good point.
I was at the menorah lighting ceremony on Sunday, and actually I was quite turned off by it. So the mayor of Prague gave a speech, and I found that, unfortunately, his speech to me seemed to emphasize the separateness of the Jewish community here, rather than being a natural part of Czech life. And if I got it correctly, he was emphasizing that he hopes that one day the community, and he used these words that just, I thought they were kind of bothersome. He said, will not be something mystical and exotic to the rest of the Czechs. What I heard there was this emphasis on the separateness. Yeah. And that's in a way what I've seen here as a foreigner, as a Jew. And in a way, I find it quite nice to hear you say that the menorah lighting in front of the Rudolfinum, this is symbolic of the Czechness of the Jews here. But I guess I had a different impression, and I'm just curious more about this. Sorry.
I think that you were unlucky to hear a politician speaking about these things, because actually ever since I was 15, 16, all my friends knew about who I was, and we were all part of one student community when we were, you know, grammar school kids, one university students community. And it's true nowadays. And people who came last week and said, oh, when are you lighting the candles? Can we stay? You know, like, okay, we'll invite you when we lit up the Christmas tree. And it's only the politicians who have to actually distinguish themselves as the understanding, the tolerant, those who embrace all the communities in Prague, especially if you are a new mayor. Well, you know, I think it was just, I think unfortunately, this is what you will hear from the politicians. You won't hear it from ordinary people.
We have another question.
Hi, I'm Stephen Weeks, a writer, novelist and conservationist. First of all, I got one observation and then also a comment on or amplification of something Anna Frankova said. So observation is that I last year bought a church to convert into a house. So a lot of my Czech friends say, oh, my God, isn't it creepy? And I said, well, you believe, do you? And they said, no, I'm an atheist. I said, well, how can it be creepy? Just a building where a lot of people met who believed in magic and magic didn't exist. So what can be creepy about that? So it's very interesting that the whole notion of creepiness connected with churches is only for people who must believe in something about it. Yeah. Otherwise, and also they see all these movies about devil worshipping and everything else, they'd fall flat if they was total atheists. Right. They'd just be looking at these strange people who believed in nothing, you know, or something. You know, so I find that very interesting. There is, of course, this latent underneath fundamental belief in the old traditions. But something Anna Frankova said about shame. Now, shame I find very, very interesting as a concept, because certainly being English, for example, if a politician does something genuinely bad, he will never show his face again. He is ashamed and he disappears from public life. Here, that doesn't seem to happen. What is interesting is that in the law here, there is no law which says you shall not steal. There is a law which says if you are caught stealing, you get 6 months for a button and a year for something else or whatever. So there isn't this fundamental pillar of the Christian belief, which and the Jewish belief, of course, in the Ten Commandments. And the analogy is the famous example here of pedestrian crossings. They started, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, pedestrian crossings, black and white striped crossings. But people were so often knocked down when they tried to cross them because the law did not say you had to stop at the crossing. And only 2 years ago, they changed the law to say pedestrian crossings, you must stop at them. And so in a sense, it's the same whole thing about ticking boxes. It didn't say there's a fundamental concept that you should not run over pedestrians if they're trying to cross a zebra crossing. So it's this lack of a connection between cause and effect, which is, to me, the biggest legacy of either communism or the Austro-Hungarian Empire or whatever, whichever. There is in this society a disconnect between cause and effect. Yeah. And somehow that disconnect, in my view, is related to a disconnect between belief and what you should be doing.
Well, I'm glad you said it, because it relates back to what I said about the set of values, whether they come from religion or whether they come from somewhere else. In this country, because you don't have this basic set of rules, what is right, what is wrong, we need those laws. And our politicians and our legislators believe that you have to have these laws that actually give you an exhaustive list of what you can do, what you can't do, what happens if you do, what happens if you don't. And I think this is one of the reasons why, for example, people are run over on pedestrian crossing, because people seem to need, because they're used to it, this you know, list of situations when they are supposed to stop, when they, you know, how far the pedestrian must be from the crossing, you know, when you have to stop. So, yeah, I think this is what I was talking about, and that's unfortunate that the shame is the most important thing, I think, especially when it comes to politicians, that's why other politicians in other countries just run away if they do something wrong. In this country, they say, I've done nothing wrong.
Yes, I'd just like to react on your observation first. On the church, you know, I don't believe in spirits, but still. And this, I must use Jacques Lacan, who, of course, is surely one of the most popular psychoanalysts after Freud and Jung. He used two jokes to describe something similar that you described. This is Niels Bohr, I think, who is, of course, the Danish physicist. And a friend comes to his house, and he has the horseshoe on the door. And so his friends ask Niels Bohr, well, you know, why do you have it here? I say, oh, people say it brings you luck. And the friend says, well, I can't believe you're so superstitious. Do you actually believe in it? And Niels Bohr answers, of course I don't. But they say it works even if you don't believe it. and that, I think, is a good line. So there is an inconsistency in our beliefs, which is predominant. And I will. And the other joke is there is a patient who believes that he is a piece of grain. So he comes to a, you know, therapist, and you know they spend years and years and years. And at the end of the day, he actually now believes that he's a human being. He's no longer a grain. So he walks out, cured, out of the institution. And the first chicken he meets, you know, he runs away back to the psychoanalyst and says, oh, there's a chicken that wants to eat me. And the psychoanalyst says, well, but you know, you understand that you are a human being. You believe, yes, I know. But does the chicken know? and this is the inconsistency, so to speak, of our belief systems. We're actually extremely inconsistent in our beliefs. In other words, to expand on the fact that there are no... it's improper, I think, to say that I'm an unbeliever. It would be more appropriate to say, I believe I'm an unbeliever. And, to be quite fair, it is also more appropriate to say, I believe I'm a Christian. Because if we really believed Christianity, we wouldn't be sitting here. We believe it quite a lot, but, you know...
It's a New Testament.
It's a second derivation of a belief that we really actually believe.
No, it's just, in Czech, it's so wonderful. It's an old archaic translation. Věří, pane, věřím, pomoz mé nedověře. Lord, I believe, please help me in my disbelief, or please help me in my lack of belief. Yeah. Two options, but the Czech word is... Yeah. It's nicer.
It's like if dveze nedovírají, so this is also nedověra.
But it means believe and disbelieve. Yeah. There are two, yes. It's just one cannot be without the other, I think. It's a sort of dialectic.
Yeah, in fact, and if you want to change your belief system, you mustn't attack your proclaimed beliefs, such as Christianity or atheism or whatever. You must tackle with the underlying structures of the archetypes of I believe that I believe that I believe. And that's where I think the change may lie.
Yeah.
Just maybe in connection with what Stephen Weeks said about the zebra crossing. So I followed this story, and there was a fascinating logic that some politicians had. After a year of the new rules being in place, they discovered that the statistics of people dying on crossings had gone up. And therefore there were politicians in all seriousness saying, the problem is we need to remove the crossings. And I'm not joking, that was perceived as a problem. So sometimes, you know, making the logical connections isn't always enough.
My name is Anne, and I think one of the really important concepts about the fall, which could be explored forever, is how freedom and order became distorted. And I think it's quite interesting in how people think about their belief or their faith. And this distinction between belief and faith is also important here, because I think faith, it leads you to something which is outside yourself and you begin to lose control. And it seems to me that as people are searching for God, they, well, let me distinguish between a honest search and just maybe a search which satisfies your need to somehow be religious. They want to have control, but somehow without the legitimacy of being able to really defend what it is they believe and why. And so I think a lot of people are very happy to be agnostic because they feel somehow religious, but without the obligation that would come with any real belief. And so I'm wondering, I'd be interested in anything you have to say in reaction, and also how you see from your own, maybe path toward faith, this interplay between freedom and lack of freedom, or loss of freedom.
Yeah. Quite a common mistake that we make is that we feel that freedom and rules work against each other. In fact, this is completely to the contrary. Rules and freedom work together. Let's take an example of language. Language is lots and lots and lots and lots of rules. Yet, I'm not expressing my freedom more if I... this is no expression of freedom. I now, yes, defiled all the rules of language. Does that make me a freer person? No. And, to bring the point home completely, take poetry, which adds another hundreds, perhaps, of absolutely unnecessary rules. Why would it have to rhyme? Why does it have to have a rhythm? Why does it have to have a certain number of, you know, things? This is completely ridiculous. But isn't poetry the very most beautiful expression of the freedom of a human spirit? Yet, there is an additional set of rules on the top of the rules that we have in grammar and language.
I think that Silva Fischerova wanted to say something.
Just only a slight idea about what Jana said, that it's necessary to have some religious basis for a set of values.
I don't myself at the moment see it anywhere else than the... But I can be wrong, you know. There might be many sets of values that I myself don't know about.
I just remember I've heard a similar idea from a Protestant priest. But I told him that I cannot agree, because if you look at the French Enlightenment, so the best heads of the French Enlightenment did their best to show that even if we won't trust in God, so there is something, some set of rules that people should observe, and that we don't need God for having such set of rules.
I don't think we need the God. After all, we could have the Ten Commandments without a God, but I don't know who gave them to us.
I think that the French philosophers would say that because we are men, we have our nature, and our nature, it's another sort of belief. It's not atheism.
Yes,
so,
I fully agree.
It's a set of belief, and our nature is of such a nature that we need the set of rules to survive as a species.
Isn't it a fact also that one of the most engaging qualities of Czechs, I think, is this scepticism that people have? The question that the person in the audience asked about agnosticism and not being able to take the responsibility of belief, isn't this scepticism also an extremely healthy state of affairs, especially in the given Czech history where you've had again and again people saying, this is what you will believe in.
Do you think the Czechs are sceptics?
They believe in their scepticism.
They believe in their scepticism. Yes.
We're going to go around in circles.
Sorry.
I don't think the Czechs are sceptics. I think the Czechs are cautious. They have the tendency to doubt, but I don't think they are really sceptics as a nation.
And again, I must reiterate, skepticism is yet another ideology, you know. Skepticism is not getting rid of ideology. Skepticism is yet another ideology. We could go with René Descartes, who started this whole thing. I doubt this and this and this. I doubt his doubting host because, you know, quite frankly, if you read it very carefully, he just changed the belief sets from what was previously believed to a new belief set. But they're ontologically on the quite solid. You can't get rid of ideology. There's no way you can do that.
No.
You always have to swap one for another.
There's somebody in the audience who has a question.
Thank you. Actually, I prefer to make a comment. Unfortunately, the gentleman in the front row whose comment I want to respond to is left. But my name is Bruce Kahnweiser, and I'm a freelance journalist and a lecturer here in Prague. He said a few minutes ago about the issue of people getting run over in crosswalks, and he attributed it in part to a lack of faith or a lack of belief in society. I think that's manifestly false. I think the problem with the crosswalks is another manifestation of a country 20 years after communism still trying to come to terms with civil society. It's an issue of people still trying to come to terms with what they can do and what they can't do and what they should do and what they shouldn't do. Because after communism collapsed, basically everybody confused the freedom of democracy with a kind of anarchical freedom to do whatever they felt like they could do and whatever they could get away with. And they're still trying to come to terms with that 20 years later, and that's not unique to the Czech Republic. The same thing in Poland, a highly Catholic country, same thing everywhere in a former Soviet bloc. I think that's the problem with the crosswalks, among many other things.
Any other comments?
Can I start from a little bit, maybe a deeper thing? The only time, and I'll be quite sure because this doesn't really answer your question, but you sparkled a thought in my head. The only time when our should and want are aligned, this usually an adult person, I want and should are in a disalliance. I do other things that I should. And I know this. This has nothing to do with religion. This is an internal consistency. The only time when our I want and I should are aligned are at childhood. And children only, looking at Nietzsche, I could almost go and argue that we have Übermensch among us. It is the children. If you're left in a building, you know, let's imagine a chamber where whatever you did in that chamber would be unknown to nobody, including God. Okay, so there's a special chamber which is untransparent even for God. All right. And what's more, in that chamber you can do whatever you want with all the fancies that you have in your head. Now, the first question is, would you enter such a room? The second question is, what would you do in that room? Because in that room you are left with your own restrictions only. So in an adult person, we actually want the things that we don't want quite often. Again, it's a second derivation of a thing. You know, I want to look at pornography, but I don't want to want. And again, you need to first tackle that I want to want. I want to be an intellectual, but I don't want to be an intellectual. And it's always interesting to study these inconsistencies that children don't have, but we do. So we kind of, again, put up a second layer of artificial mock beliefs and mock commandments. And those are exactly the mock commandments that you are left alone in that chamber which nobody sees. And those are the ultimate restrictions that we put us on ourselves. Is the, whatever, you can call it morals, but that would be a mishandling of the term a little bit. But mog, that even in a room where you could do whatever you wanted to do, you wouldn't want to do everything that you would want to do, if you take my meaning. A little skew answer, but...
In one of my poems, I have a saying that we are... cannot want what we want.
There you go. Wonderful. This is where poetry meets economics.
Oh yes, it's a poem where it's a poem how the soul the banners.
Yep.
And it's about modal verbs. Is it right in English? Mm-hmm. Oh yes. So modal verbs are very important because if you are in such a room,
right,
you describe us. So it's a situation for modal verbs. But I just, what I can say, a little observation, I think no one can say what he or she will do in that room only in the moment when he or she enters it.
Right.
You cannot say it in advance.
But would you enter it?
Oh.
Would you dare to?
Maybe. So, if I may. Hell, the soul banners. So... today loves just infidelity. So all of us who thought we can do what we want, we needn't, we can't just want. We can want what we want. All of us will meet in hell and extremely gruesome punishments in the midst of alien children and find your own. In the midst of alien women and find yourself. In the midst of fathers and mothers and all of them yours, amid gods and grain and sperm, within the soul and free will, where there's nothing, just wind fluttering like banners.
I face quite a problem, actually, which is how to end this discussion, because as I said, we're talking in reality as we sit here on the last day of Hanukkah. The program's going to be going out on Christmas Day, in all probability. There'll also be many listeners to Radio Prague around the world who maybe have another value system, aren't Christians, aren't Jewish. So I'm not quite sure how to end this discussion and this radio program. So maybe if one of you could help me.
So maybe if I may just very briefly, maybe our professed belief systems are quite different. I profess Christianity, I profess Islam, blah, blah, blah. But maybe, again, coming back to the second derivation, that's much more in common. I want to want this is much more common in mankind than what I actually want. And I think this is where we need to find unity between different beliefs. You know, we all want to not want to kill, but occasionally we do want to kill. But we despise that desire, but some desires we quite invoke. And I think this is where we can be united truly across many belief systems, where we actually put away our professed belief systems and look beyond what we actually want to believe or our belief system and the parts that we don't believe in, yet we do believe them.
If I may, it just occurred to me that even though we in Czech don't distinguish between belief and faith, there is something about the word faith which we actually have a word for in Czech. If you are faithful to something, you are věrný. And that's something else than to believe in something. So I think that perhaps we need more faith, because then we'll be faithful to what we think is right or wrong, even in this crazy society that, or even this crazy country that we have nowadays.
Okay, I can perhaps, if speaking about faith, I forgot to say one point of Wilfred Candwell Smith. When he tried to explain to his readers what faith is, if compared with belief. So he said it's something similar with the Latin word credo.
Yeah.
And credo, etymologically, goes with cors cordis, which means heart. And it reminded me of the classical statue of Saint Augustine. And he has in his hand a heart, which is burning. And in the burning heart, he has a feather, writing feather. It's a point that you cannot write in a different way than in this way, as Saint Augustine did.
Silva Fischerová, Tomáš Sedláček, Jana Franková, thank you very much indeed for joining me in this, I think, fascinating discussion where we've really leapt from one theme to another, but with lots of sparks of inspiration, I think. Also, many thanks to the audience here in the Shakespeare and Sons bookshop. Also, once again, thank you to the owners of the Shakespeare and Sons bookshop, and also to the Czech Literary Portal, the co-organizer of this event. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.